Lawrence did not dissuade Temeraire with much enthusiasm. He would not have greatly minded Rankin's being squashed under other circumstances, and the present situation would have rendered the event not only painless, but highly desirable. His sentiments in the matter were only the more exacerbated the following morning, when Riley called upon them. Lawrence had preferred to pass another irregular night up on the promontory in his small tent, still more comfortable a berth than remaining aboard ship, when he now must be careful only to visit the quarter-deck and not go forward. For Rankin was, of course, perfectly correct in the point of etiquette, and they were both barred from the field of honour, which was the only other suitable redress Rankin could have demanded for Lawrence's actions in their last meeting. Lawrence could not be sorry in the least for having handled Rankin so violently, but neither could he force himself into Rankin's presence, nor pursue the quarrel to which Rankin could not make answer, and retain any pretensions to the character of a gentleman.
"And I cannot blame you for it either," Riley said. "But it left me in an awkward position. I had to have him to dinner, and Bligh too, or look rather shabby. And I'm wretchedly sorry, Lawrence. Is this egg likely to be something out of the common way? Because what must the corker do 10 minutes after we're at table but declare Bligh has been monstrous used by a pack of mutinous dogs, and it ought not be borne?"
"Oh, damn him!" Lawrence said, unguarded in savage exasperation. "No, Tom. As far as the egg goes, not if you mean of an order to pick a quarrel with Temeraire. But that has nothing to do with the case. We cannot set upon a British dragon if it is as small as a Winchester. Are we to have a pitched battle in the harbour? I cannot conceive what he is thinking."
"Oh, I will tell you that," Riley said. "He is thinking he means to have the beast, will you nil you? I beg you to imagine how our passenger took it. A Bligh at once informed me he considers it my duty to ensure the Admiralty's orders as regards the egg are carried out, and that he will be sure to write their lordships to express his opinion and convey that he has made me so aware."
And the very last thing desirable to Riley at the present date was any suggestion of disobedience or recalcitrance, and all the more so if there were any sign it should be provoked by Lawrence or even amenable to him. Their connection had already injured Riley's credit with their lordships to a severe extent, and he served now, as did all Lawrence's former associates, under a veil of suspicion. Bligh might not carry his point so far as his re-establishment in the colony, and his ill-management might invite the scorn rather than the sympathy of the Admiralty. That did not mean the Navy Board would not accept, with the other hand, any charges Bligh laid at Riley's door. All the more so, Lawrence knew, that they had been given fresh cause to regard Temeraire and any personage even remotely associated with him with suspicion. Temeraire had received a letter also in the post carried by the Beatrice from Pasitia, who had evidently somehow acquired a scribe.
"We have finished the pavilion already."
"Oh," Temeraire said sadly, "and I'm not there to see it."
"And begun on a second. We were puzzled where we should get the funds, as it is amazing how quickly money goes. The government tried to persuade us all to go back to the breeding grounds and leave off building when we were almost quite finished, if you can imagine it. So the promised supply has been very late and slow, and when they do send us any cattle, they are thin and not tasty, so we've had to buy food of our own, and it is very dear at present. Also, Requiescat will eat like a glutton, of course. But we contrived. Magistatis suggested we should send Lloyd to Dover to inquire after carting work, and we've worked out that men will pay a great deal just for us to carry things to London and other towns, as we can do it much more quickly than horses, and I've worked out a very nice method by which one can calculate the most efficient way to go among all of them, taking on some goods and leaving off others, only it grows quite tiresome to calculate if one wishes to go to more than 5 or 6 places. There was a little noise about our coming and going. Nobody much minded when it was just the Winchesters, or even the Reapers, but of course Requiescat can carry so very much more, even if he is too lazy to go further than Dover to London and back, and Ballista and Magistatis and the other heavyweights, and after all, it is not as though we do not fit into the coverts, so we really saw no reason they should not go too. But then government grew upset, when they might have given us proper food to begin with, and we should never have needed to trouble ourselves, and they tried to make a quarrel, and set some harnessed dragons in the cupboard and told them to keep us out of it. They were out of Scotland, I think. We did not know them particularly, but Ballista said to them it was no sense squabbling over something so silly, for look, the government has just put them in the cupboard because they did not want us in the cupboard, even though they were just as big, and anyway there was plenty of room, and we were only passing through. They all thought that was quite sensible, once she gave them a few of our cows to be friendly. It seems cows are very dear in the coverts, too, and nobody gets them very often any more, even the harnessed beasts."
There was, besides this communique, a good deal of gossip about the relations among the dragons, which Lawrence read to Temeraire only half attending, Between Pisidia's lines he could easily read the frantic reports racing through Whitehall, unharnessed heavyweights descending as they wished into every great city of Britain, terrifying the populace and wrecking the business of ordinary carters to boot, and bribing their harnessed fellows with the greatest of ease, despite all the certain persuasions and efforts of those dragons' captains.
"It is a great pity about Gladius and Cantarella having a falling out,"
Temeraire said,
"for I was sure they would have made a splendid egg. Also I do not like Quaritorius very much, for he was always making a fuss about carrying soldiers, when we all had to do it, so very tiresome for everyone, but complaining did not make it any better. Lawrence, do you suppose we might carry things for people here, and so be paid? Only, no,"
he interrupted his own thought, rather downcast,
"for there is only this one town, and no other to carry things to. How I wish we were home!"
Lawrence had wished it, too, but silently folded away the letter which killed his hopes of return a morning. It yet crackled in his coat pocket now as he answered wryly.
"I am sorry you should have had the unpleasantness of his threats. We will, of course, not ask you to interfere, Tom, nor, I hope, put you in any awkward position."
"Well, I hope I'm not so much a scrub as to come here and ask you out of the side of my mouth to have a care for my own sake," Wryly said. "I'm pretty well found in prize money, after all, and if I am set ashore, at least I can take my little fellow home, and not worry my life away wondering what absurd thing Catherine is doing with him."
This a little bitterly. He had not received a letter from Captain Harcourt.
"But this could easily grow to be a more serious matter than a mere quarrel," Lawrence said soberly to Temeraire, after Wryly had left. "If Bligh chooses to make it a charge of disobedience, and their lordships pleased to have an excuse for a court-martial, I can easily imagine it."
"I can, too," Temeraire said, "and I'm sure we oughtn't let him hurt Wryly or Granby either. But we cannot let Rankin hurt the egg either. Lawrence, I have made Roland and Domaine bring the egg out, just long enough so I might look at it, and I think it is going to hatch very soon. Can we not take it away?"
"Away?"
Lawrence said. There was nowhere to go.
"Oh, into the countryside," Temeraire said. "Only until it has hatched, I mean, and then we can come back again, and it may choose among the officers if it likes. Or if you thought better," he added, "we might take one or two of the best of them instead, so it might choose among them directly. But no one who would mean to try and use a hood or a net."
It was a scheme which Lawrence ought at once have rejected, but he surprised himself by thinking soberly that so blatant a manoeuvre would at least be a stroke bold enough to ensure blame could be set only to their own much overdrawn account. Granby and Wryly, left behind and unable to trace their whereabouts, could not so easily be complained of as Granby and Wryly standing idly by, in the face of some interference carried out immediately before them. It was scarcely calculated to win him approval from their lordships, certainly none from Bligh, but there was, Lawrence, with a little dark humour acknowledged, something liberating in having nothing whatsoever of which he might be robbed by the law. Not even hope. He looked at the egg himself. He did not hold himself up as an expert, but the shell was certainly harder than it had been aboard ship, and with that same brittle, slightly thinning quality which he remembered a little from Temeraire's hatching and Ischirka's.
"We could take no one else with us," Lawrence said, "at least not consenting, and there would be something curious in abducting an aviator to make him a captain. The fellow could not help but be doubted afterwards."
"Well, to be perfectly honest, I think it just as well not to take any of them," Temeraire said. "I do not think much of the lot. They were all quite unpleasant on the ship, and they will think they have a right to the eggs, even though they had nothing to do with making them, and I have been taking care of them all this while. They have nothing to recommend them any more than Rankin does. I don't suppose the hatchling will want any of them."
"We are in too much disgrace, my dear, to expect to see any of them display to advantage," Lawrence said. "But Lieutenant Forthing at least is held a good officer, Granby tells me, and fought with courage at the Battle of Shoeburyness."
"Oh, he is the worst of them,"
Temeraire said, immediately censorious, though Lawrence did not quite know what had provoked such a degree of heat.
"And I don't care if we are in disgrace, that is no excuse for behaving like a scrub. Besides," Temeraire added, "he is wretchedly untidy, strings coming out of his coat and his trousers patched. Even Rankin does not look ragged."
"Rankin," Lawrence said, "is the third son of an earl, and can afford to be nice in his clothing. I'm afraid Mr. Forthing was a foundling in the dockyards at Dover, and taken on for creeping into the coverts as a child to sleep next to the dragons. He has no kin in the world."
"He might still brush his coat," Temeraire said obstinately.
No, I should quite prefer no one at all to him. I'm sure Arcady would be quite disgusted with me if I should allow it.
He leaned over to look at the egg and put out his thin, forked tongue to touch the shell.
I cannot quarrel with you on this point. If he has left the egg in your charge, Lawrence said, the judgment must be yours. In any case, it would be difficult to manage. We must also contrive some covering for the egg, and—
Oh, Temeraire said. Oh, no, whatever are you doing?
Lawrence paused in confusion.
I beg your pardon?
No, Lawrence, I am speaking to the egg,
Temeraire said, raising his head with an expression of consternation, his ruff flattened against his neck.
It is hatching. However are we to get it away now?